Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Today is Atlanta's most trusted advisors. Once again, I am Ryan McPherson here today. Thank you so much for joining us. We are also joined by our co-host today, the beautiful Bonnie Buell Russick. How are you today, Bonnie?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for that introduction. It's spring weather. I need to be on patios.
I hear you. It's so nice outside today. Beautiful day here in Atlanta, and another great day for Atlanta's most trusted advisors, where we bring in experts in the industry here and around the metro area to talk about what's trending in their industry. So who do we have joining us today?
We are joined by Ann Tyler Hall of Hall Benefits Law. She is an ERISA legal compliance problem solver and a benefits program designer and drafter. An attorney in principle with Hall Benefits Law, and the firm is focused on helping businesses attract and retain top employees and avoid costly non-compliance errors. So that sounds like a really, really big job there, Ann Tyler.
It is, but we're up for the task and we enjoy it.
Oh, that's great. And then we are also joined by Stephanie Hodge, the Chief Human Resources Officer for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Metro Atlanta, responsible for managing all aspects of human resources and supporting the organization's strategic initiatives. And she is also a client of Ann Tyler's law firm, so she can kind of come at the perspective of somebody that's used the services and has benefited greatly from them.
That's
so
right.
We really appreciate both you guys being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Very good. Yeah, thank you so much for joining. Let's start with you, Stephanie. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to begin working with the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay. Well, I have been in HR for about 19 years and come from a for-profit background. I spent about 15 years in a financial services firm, an international firm. And really wanted to start to give back to the community and feel good about what I was doing. So about 4 years ago, I made a transition to nonprofit. Boys and Girls Clubs really spoke to me because of what they're doing for so many kids in the Metro Atlanta community. We serve about 3,800 kids daily. So we're the second next provider outside of the school system for our kids. And so that really spoke to me.
But you wanted to make that change personally as well as professionally in your
life,
bringing your expertise in human resources to a nonprofit cause. And
That's right.
So you enjoyed that role since you've been there about 4 years, you said?
Yes. Love it.
Very good. So then at some point you needed to reach out to get some help from Ann Tyler and her services.
Right.
So how did your two paths cross?
Well, I actually saw Ann at a breakfast hosted by one of our auditors in our pension plan, really loved what she talked about and we were deciding to transition our retirement plan. And I knew that I wanted some assistance, some legal assistance to make sure that the transition went properly and that we did everything, crossed all our T's and dotted all our I's. So I reached out to Ann and kind of explained what we were trying to do. And she got on board immediately, which was wonderful.
Do you normally, Ann, provide these services for nonprofits, or is this something you do regularly?
We have a variety of clients in nonprofit and for-profit, but I would say that our clients typically are middle market companies. We define that as probably our smallest client has about 25 employees, largest has about 500.
Okay. So, and again, how long have you been at your solo practice there with Ann Tyler Hall?
That's right.
Yeah. So
that's right.
Yeah. How long?
So my background was started out at large law firm, Alston & Byrd, King & Spalding, two biggies in town. Mm-hmm. And so was there for almost 7 years in the two larger law firms and represented primarily Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. Sophisticated ERISA issues, complex problems, working through benefits programs. A lot of what we did with ERISA compliance was helping clients through a merger acquisition. And those are when the benefits issues, the ERISA legal compliance issues, kind of rose to the top and became then an issue of real concern for a company. And the reality was that typically it wasn't if there was an ERISA legal compliance problem, it's where is it? We would value some of those liabilities and then the corporate group would go back and negotiate a purchase price reduction. So that highlights the need for staying on top of ERISA legal compliance. It's a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
Laws are changing every year, and we can talk later about this little-known law that was passed in 2010, the Affordable Care Act. But in retirement plan legal compliance, 2013 alone, the Department of Labor released statistics that they assessed $1.6 billion in fines and penalties against plan sponsors. So that's where we want to keep our clients out of a penalty situation. Stephanie is doing her job well. She understands that ERISA legal compliance is important. So what we do is work alongside someone like Stephanie, who is in HR, and making sure that while they've got their responsibilities and on top of the administration, and Stephanie was really good at staying aware and on top of the legal issues, but we are advisors, counselors in that area to make sure that plan sponsors avoid those legal compliance pitfalls that can be so costly.
So let's back up just a little bit and tell us what is ERISA and why pretty much everybody needs to care about it.
That's a great question. I get that asked that a lot. What do you do? What is ERISA?
Yeah.
So ERISA is the acronym for Employee Retirement Income Security Act. It was passed in 1974. It governs all of your benefits plans, and that includes executive compensation. Well, executive compensation really falls under the SEC and the Internal Revenue Code, but there are ERISA claims procedures that apply in executive compensation typically, but primarily then retirement plans and then health and welfare benefits. That includes Affordable Care Act. Affordable Care Act, amended part of ERISA. Affordable Care Act would fall under that.
Okay. And when you say it governs them, what does it make them do, or what falls under that governing power of the law?
Yeah, great question. So for instance, a qualified retirement plan, which Stephanie and I worked through, you have vesting boundaries, and that's different from, for instance, a non-qualified deferred compensation plan, which has much more open architecture, but you don't have the tax benefits in a non-qualified plan. In a qualified plan, ERISA defines participation requirements, vesting requirements, claims procedures, fiduciary requirements. That's what I spoke mm-hmm. to, I guess it's been almost a year, about nine months ago, spoke on fiduciary breach issues. And that's become a big going concern for plan sponsors. There was actually a court case filed in the Northern District of Georgia here in Atlanta a few months ago suing a company for fiduciary breach. So all plan sponsors, and if you have a retirement plan or a health and welfare benefit plan, there's someone in your company who's a fiduciary, whether you know it or not. So the first issue on fiduciary breach issues is knowing you're a fiduciary and then understanding what are those responsibilities. And those are the types of issues that we help clients with as well, avoiding fiduciary breach issues.
Oh, wow. In cases, I mean, I would guess if you have any sort of benefit plan, it sounds like you really do need some legal assistance to kind of make sure that, you know, everything is lined up properly. Everything is, you're following all the letter of the law. I guess, Stephanie, I'd like mm-hmm. to hear from you a little bit on this about, you know, what is it that you do as opposed mm-hmm. to what, you know, you look to Ann Tyler to mm-hmm. do, and how do you break up those responsibilities as you're managing the plan?
No, as I was listening to Ann speak, that was really the primary reason for giving her a call. So knowing the liability as being a fiduciary and having the broad spectrum of developing a plan from scratch. So that's essentially what we were doing, transitioning our old pension plan, if anyone really knows what that is anymore, and a 403B plan into a 401K plan. And we, meaning myself and our board, our HR committee, had ideas about how that plan should look. I mean, we knew what we wanted to do, but I knew that I needed to call Ann and make sure that I had someone working with me so our best intentions didn't turn into our worst nightmares. So Anne was great in talking to me step by step. I would share with her, here's our goals on what we want our plan to do. Here's how we want our match to look. Here's ideas that we want in terms of communication. And Anne would challenge me each step of the way in terms of, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? So those are really good discussions to make sure that we were thinking about everything. We challenged each other, but I made sure that I listened to her in terms of everything that related to compliance. And a lot of things I grudgingly did in terms of correspondence and regular documentation that seemed like drudgery, but it's really important and an important aspect of developing the plan. So I think as an organization and having that liability on your back, having someone kind of walk through that with you is essential.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, those penalties can be very stiff, right? Financial penalties and such. And then it's a lot to recover from that.
Right. And particularly for a nonprofit, that could close your doors.
Yeah.
So that alone should be a requirement to call an ERISA attorney when you're doing something like this.
So when does a for-profit or nonprofit begin to think about this? You know, you said when they adopt that plan, that retirement package, but is that after one employee, five employees? When do you normally see this happen?
That's a good question. So we typically represent companies that are growing, and this is on their radar screen. But Stephanie raised a great point. What was so great about working with Stephanie is that she involved us in the plan design and wanted our feedback on plan design issues. And that's really where we want to be, a counselor to companies trying to design benefit programs that attract and retain your best, your top employees. So Stephanie and I had a conversation about, what does your demographic look like? What are they, what is attractive to them? And let's talk about cost as well and the administrative burden of each of these features of the plan. Have you thought about this? And so it's great. And we like to be involved in the implementation phase. So we're not just helping clients avoid legal non-compliance errors. That's an important objective. But we also want the employer plan sponsors to get the benefit of offering the program and to maximize that benefit and to think through an implementation phase. You know, why are we doing this? And if we're doing it, making sure we understand it. And so walking through, we walked through, for instance, the adoption agreement on the new plan and making sure. And again, Stephanie did such a great job of understanding the importance and being very involved in that process, and making sure that the plan design and features are understood, because that's the other issue. Department of Labor, IRS picks this up all the time. Plan document may not have a problem, but in operation, the plan sponsor misses a step, gets a definition wrong, and then they're looking at a penalty. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, in the matter that Stephanie and I worked on, a notice had to go out to notify participants that the plan was changing. And I think, quote this to Stephanie, $100 a day per person penalty. So let's say, for example, you had 250 participants in a plan and the notice goes out 30 days late. That's $750,000 penalty.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. So the consequences are severe. And so we have these conversations with clients who are skeptical about hiring an ERISA attorney. We say, you know, this is the other side of this. If you are not careful and have counsel through this process, the potential penalties are severe. And we have clients also who are in a Department of Labor IRS audit. We have about three clients right now who are actually going through this audit, and the penalties and the administrative time and burden that creates can be pretty severe.
Why is it so severe? What is the government trying to avoid by levying such heavy fines and penalties?
Well, and I think the government's message is, if you offer a benefit plan, it needs to be compliant. It needs to be in compliance, and you need to make that a priority. And so some of our best employers are those who've been through an audit, and then they really understand the importance.
So overall, they're trying to avoid fraud or trying to avoid people getting away with things they shouldn't. So the government must stay laser focused that you're complying. The regulation is there.
It's not always fraud, though. It is inadvertent errors, though, that can create costly issues. We had a client last year assessed a $26,000 penalty because they had operationally had made an error. They brought us in. They went back and forth with the Department of Labor and did not resolve the issue. They brought us into the hearing phase, the last stage, and we got the penalty down from $26,000 to $5,000. Mm-hmm. We made a, you know, our mitigating circumstances argument that the plan sponsor was doing everything they could to address the error, but that highlights that the error can be inadvertent, doesn't have to be intentional. That's the other issue about ERISA. You either do it, you comply with the law, or you don't. Intent doesn't matter. Reasonable cause doesn't matter. Willful neglect, some of those other intent statutes that would apply, for instance, in criminal law, they don't apply in ERISA. You either do it or you don't, and it's pretty black and white.
And I would imagine there are tons of businesses out there and nonprofits mm-hmm. as well that have no idea that all these restrictions right. are in place. And like sending out a letter a day right. late and you suddenly owe right. $25,000 yeah. for that day, mm-hmm. yeah, that's kind of unfathomable to me right. as a small business owner yeah. and scary.
And even when you think about the plan document, so it's worded so that Ann understands it, but none of us would.
Yeah.
So my interpretation of how we should facilitate certain things, our operational practices are one thing. As we met with Ann and talked through different components, yes, we're totally compliant with that. We're doing X, Y, and Z. And she'd say, no. What this really means is, and we'd have to go back to the drawing board and look at, okay, do we have the bandwidth to operationalize this process? And what changes do we need to make? Who do we need to involve? So it turns into a broader mm-hmm. Impact just to avoid some of these fees and the challenges that Ann talked about. So
wow. And I also understand we work with some ERISA CPAs. So I'd love to hear kind of what your role is and what their role is. And I know they perform audits on a lot of these
That's
plans
right.
And how, you know, businesses kind of know who to call, who to hire to do certain things. And I would imagine you probably work very closely with these CPAs.
We do. And CPAs have been great, great referral sources for us because CPAs that we work with are pretty good about saying, here's what we do. We do the audit for the retirement plan. Generally, when your retirement plan hits about 100 participants, there are exceptions to that rule. But generally, when a retirement plan hits about 100 participants, you're going to need a more extensive audit, a financial audit. Not a legal compliance audit, a financial audit. I think you need a legal compliance audit when you have 10 employees, 10 participants, because that's such an important aspect. But the financial audit is different from legal compliance. And so CPAs who are working on those financial audits often find legal compliance problems. And so they bring us in to address those issues. And a lot of what we do is drafting memos, summarizing the letter of the law, what the client is doing to comply with the letter of the law, so that if the Department of Labor, IRS comes in, we want them walking out the door, we want them to avoid a penalty situation. And we can do that if we're brought in before an audit has already commenced. Really interesting case. This is the first time this happened about 6 months ago. We had a client, a participant had dialed in to the DOL hotline and said, my contributions are going in late to the plan. So the Department of Labor has a specified time period by which contributions must be segregated from the participant's paycheck and then put in the plan. And so participant called in and said, my contributions are going in late to the plan. 2 weeks later, the plan sponsor got a letter from the Department of Labor asking for approximately 2025 documentation items. So I got a call from their advisor and I said, do they need to bring you in? I said, absolutely. They brought us in and we gave the Department of Labor everything they asked for, but made it very clear that we were taking this matter very seriously. Interestingly, a full scope audit by the Department of Labor was not pursued. So that was a successful endeavor. So I think if we are brought in soon enough, we can try to avoid or mitigate the consequence of a noncompliance error. On the other end, when we have clients who are in an audit, we're trying to pull them out and get them out of that situation with the least penalty consequence possible. But it's a lot harder because at that point you're on the government's time frame and you've got to provide documentation and meet their time frame.
I think that's the case with legal representation in a lot of cases. It's a lot better to have, you know, pay a little bit of money advice up front than to wait till you're in a horrible lawsuit.
I have that discussion regularly. And, you know, occasionally we'll have plans. So I say, well, we're just not ready. I think in the back of my mind, okay, we'll come back when you're in a trial.
Yeah.
We'll help you then too. Yeah.
But it's good to be on the offensive when it comes to your strategy and how to prepare, because once the defenses, you know, sticks go up, you got to, you know, tackle it a whole different way. Mm-hmm. So, but that's what you did, Stephanie, with the Boys and Girls Club. You took an offensive position and said, mm-hmm. we need to get a hold on this. And we need to go find the expert to come in-house and challenge us. What advice would you give someone who is thinking about this, knows they need to tackle this problem, and how would they, you know, get some good advice from you on how to do so?
The first thing would be not to hesitate to spend the money to get legal counsel involved as early as possible. I do believe you should have a plan in place. You should have what goals you want to get out of the program or the benefit, but be open, speak to them as quickly as possible, and then discuss when is the right time to get them involved in the process. When I spoke with Anne, I explained to her, here's what we're trying to do. I'm not exactly sure when to involve you, so help me.
So she gave you some guidance on when this is a good time for us to kind of come
absolutely,
in and help, right?
Right, because my intention was, you know, I have the plan in my head, the way that I want it to be executed. Do I call you every 3 months just to check in and see, am I on the right path? Mm-hmm. Or do you just check everything right before we flip the switch? And she said, no, I need to be involved right at the beginning, because you don't know the implications of some of the decisions you're going to be mm-hmm. making. And that was certainly true as we started to think through this thing and think about how do we want to even push forward, and what does our match need to look like? I'm coming from a financial perspective. Here's what we can afford to do. This is what we'd like to do, but what are we obligated to do? And that was very helpful to understand, and then try to fit everything into the boundaries that we had.
Good. And you had mentioned, Anne, that you helped customize that plan for that company or organization as well. Talk about some of these plans today. What are the trends you're seeing in benefits plans these days?
Well, I would say, firstly, that Stephanie did a very good job of outlining their objective, and they had a good idea of what they wanted. And that's always a pleasure to work with clients like Stephanie, who are very involved in the process. And I would just say, as background, our experience is that HR officers and HR directors are being tasked with ERISA legal compliance at times. And the reality is they have so much on their plate that really this is where an attorney can be a true counselor and a value add to what they are doing. But with customizing plans, it's so important in the plan implementation phase. We had a client recently that wanted to jump right into an executive compensation plan. They knew what they wanted. And at the first conversation we had, I said, let's just take a step back just for a minute and talk about the different options. Firstly, what are your objectives? What are your primary objectives? And then talking about the different options within that. And then I always try to talk about what are your ongoing obligations with this plan as well, because we see so many plan sponsors that fall out of compliance. And it's not hard to do because it's a moving target.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, but these days, is there anything that's different? Where do you go to stay up to date on what's the cutting edge of benefits plans, regulations, and all that?
The IRS keeps us at, our IRS and Department of Labor have been active. They keep us busy constantly reading regulations and
exciting
new guidance. It's so exciting. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. But I think I would highlight exactly what Stephanie said, that there has absolutely been a trend of moving away from the defined benefit plans.
Okay.
Where the responsibility really was on the employer. You're going to provide this set amount of benefit after someone retires, to now 401k plans, defined contribution plans, where the onus is really on the employee. And so employers have to think creatively about how to engage participants, get them involved in the plan, participating in the plan. And employers have to think more proactively about that and how they're going to offset not offering a defined benefit plan, mm-hmm. and how to structure the matching contribution and incentivize them, and the vesting schedule. You know, how long do you want your vesting schedule to be? And so the landscape is changing.
Yes, ever so. And there are any mm-hmm. challenges experiencing nonprofits to profits and their benefits plan packages? Some things that maybe that they do at the Boys and Girls Club Metro Atlanta that's different from a for-profit company.
Well, I think with the Boys and Girls Club, benefits are important because you may not have a salary that looks like a for-profit. And so your benefits are important to attracting and retaining your top employees. And Stephanie can
absolutely
speak to that.
Yeah, that was one of our primary goals when we're defining the plan, because for a nonprofit, benefits are really our lever. That is where we can differentiate ourselves from other nonprofits, as well as compete very well with our for-profit. And so the benefit of having a full and good plan really helps to attract individuals. When they look at us compared to a for-profit, we want that to look very similar. Mm-hmm. We want them to feel like they are getting an additional benefit even versus losing something from leaving a for-profit. One of the things that was a primary goal in part in terms of engagement was doing auto-enrollment. And you don't see that too heavily in either sect because it's a challenge. It may or may not send the right message, but it improves engagement. And once people are in the plan, then they get to see the benefit of participating in the plan. But another key point of developing this plan was to help us retain our current employees. How do we help to keep them incentivized as they stay with us year over year? What is the benefit if you stay with us 3 years and your investment vests? That is attractive. So those types of components. And then finally, trying to create a match that looked like what they could get in a for-profit organization, but still remain affordable. And so some of those challenges are what we had to talk through. I want to make sure that we can do this and it's affordable, but it has to be worthwhile or we don't need to do it at all. And so we had to talk through what that looks like and make sure that it was fair and equitable.
And you had to put it together for several avenues of approach there for the recruiting good talent, retaining the good talent. You mentioned you service about 3,800 kids around the metro area. How many do you have on staff over there?
We have about 380 staff members across Metro Atlanta, a mix of our full-time and part-time employees. And so our demographics are all across the board. And so we needed to try to find a plan that was attractive to our younger employees who may or may not have any interest in retirement and our more seasoned employees who want to see us and are looking to the organization to give them something a little meatier.
Well, are you currently looking for more hires? Are you looking for more volunteers?
Are
you looking to expand? How can we help? And what do you need more of the Boys and Girls Club?
I would love for people to visit our website. We have several openings, both in our corporate office and in our club facilities. Our website is bgcma.org. Please visit us. We have our opportunities out there. We are always looking for engaged professionals.
Do you have any events coming up that you would like to tell our listeners about or people can look out for on their radar maybe this spring or this summer?
Yeah. So a lot of our events are around our kids that we serve. We have upcoming in April what's called the Power of Words, and it's an opportunity to really see our kids in true form doing poetry and spoken word pieces that they've put together. So that's upcoming in April, and that's also on our website, details about that.
Good. And do you ever connect with the group larger on a national level? So do you go to conventions and conferences? How does that look?
Actually, our Southeast Conference is happening right now. Hey, everybody.
Yeah, all right. Southeast Conference.
Right. So we have a national organization and we're actually in their building, which is interesting. People get us confused.
So your headquarters of Boys and Girls Club is in Metro Atlanta and your offices for the Metro Atlanta is in that same building.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Where
are your offices located?
We are in Colony Square right across from the Woodruff Arts Center.
That's a fantastic place to be.
It's an awesome place. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you're good. And tell our listeners more about your services and how people could get in touch with you there.
Yes. So our website is www.hallbenefitslaw.com. We're on Facebook, Hall Benefits Law, Twitter, LinkedIn. And so please connect with us and review our website. We're also having an open house. We moved offices, so we're having an open house on June 9th.
Is it open to the public?
I guess so.
Yeah,
now
it is. Come one, come all.
That's right.
All benefits law. We got your doors open for sure. And how many do you have on staff over there?
We have a couple of employees and we're actually hiring an attorney. We've done a few interviews, so we're in the process of hiring another attorney. And we will keep adding as we keep growing.
Fantastic. So talk to us a little bit about that, being an entrepreneur, a business owner, but also running successful practices. What are the challenges you're experiencing along those lines?
Well, I think it's very similar to what Stephanie does. You wear a lot of hats. And no day is identical. Mm-hmm. And while the billable work takes up a good portion, as it should, that is a priority. You're also out letting people know who you are and telling them why ERISA legal counsel is so important. And then managing as you hire people. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of different hats, but I love it.
And but how do you know on any given day? Do you wake up early and say, all right, today I'm going to wear my marketing hat for a little bit and then my, you know, practice hat? Or do you have certain days of the week scheduled out? Mm-hmm. I heard when people reach a level of success like you, they have to really manage their timeline crucially.
I do a almost an org chart or a chart each day of here are the activities that I need to accomplished today. And they are a variety: management, administration, billing, mm-hmm. Hiring. And so it changes day to day. And I wait until the night or the early morning to make it for that day because it constantly changes. And it always seems to grow. Yeah. Even though I'm getting things done, yeah. It always seems to get longer. Grows.
And then how do you balance your regular life into right. all of that, right? Yeah, you know, the work-life balance.
Age-old question. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I had good practice though in large law firm. Those are rigorous, those can be rigorous long hours. And so it was great experience, great exposure to sophisticated client issues, but also just the discipline mm-hmm. of going in early and staying late. And so I applied that same schedule to my practice.
Any advice you may have for a seasoned attorney who spent several years in the big corporate law looking to kind of set up their own shop, hang their own shingle? What would you say to them?
It's great. I love it. Okay. I love being an entrepreneur. I love getting to know the client, getting to know the client. In my previous life, you know, the real focus was billable hour. And now I get to have a relationship. Obviously, we're all busy. So I don't know intimate details about mm-hmm. a client, but getting to know their business, what they're doing, that drives my passion. I enjoy that. And it's been great. Part of our growth has been clients that keep coming back to us and continue to grow.
And developing those relationships allows you to be proactive too.
Absolutely.
Rather than right. just responding to the requests you get, you're able to say, hey, have you thought about this?
Absolutely.
Or keep things. Yeah. It's a wonderful opportunity. Mm-hmm.
There's a level of trust that
absolutely.
Is developed as well, which helps me feel comfortable about the work that I'm doing because I trust her and her advice.
And it's not just a one-time engagement with a client. You develop right. that relationship and you begin to help them as their business grows, as their needs become more, and certainly avoiding any of those pitfalls mm-hmm. when it comes up to butting heads with the government.
Our objective is to be ongoing legal counsel. And part of the way we do that is we get to know the plans and we get to know the issues. And so when a client has a question 6 months later about a plan or about an issue, we've been involved intimately in that issue or that plan. And so our objective where we want to be with clients is ongoing ERISA legal counsel.
Yeah, and to avoid those heavy, stiff penalties.
That's right.
Like they can come down like lightning on you.
And the laws are constantly changing.
They are. And we can thank politicians and the lawyers in Washington for all of that as well.
Yes.
So where does all those fines go to? The money just goes back into the government coffers, I guess, right?
Just came down the pipeline that Employee Benefits Security Administration has been allotted a $24 million grant to expand. And so those fines penalties go into to pay salaries and to pay overhead for Department of Internal Revenue Code and the auditors and the services that they are doing day to day.
And do you have any, let's say, partners, you know, other than the CPAs, anyone else in the industry that you certainly partner with, other attorneys?
CPAs have been great referral sources, other attorneys. So ERISA's really sandwiched in between corporate attorney work and then employment attorneys. And so corporate and employment attorneys have been great referral sources. Affordable Care Act, health insurance brokers. Yeah. And we worked with a good variety of health insurance brokers to help clients ensure that they're ready for Affordable Care Act reporting. That's another $250 per incorrect return penalty. Those penalties can add up quickly.
Yes.
And so we partner with health insurance brokers, financial advisors. On occasion, we have issues on retirement plans with financial advisors and third-party administrators.
Yeah, and other business mm-hmm. law people, because I imagine they, business owners and nonprofit groups may find themselves in this position and don't know where to turn at that point. And having some partners in industry who can say, well, you need to call mm-hmm. Hall Benefits Law to come out there and help you out. So
absolutely. Absolutely. We want to be a value add, a service to other corporate attorneys, ultimately to our plan sponsors.
And Stephanie, and for you, as again, the Boys and Girls Club, Metro Atlanta, mm-hmm. you got lots going on there, and you look to continue relationship with Hall Benefits Law. What's the best thing about your job, particularly on a daily basis?
The best and the worst is...
Best and worst. Let's get a high and a low here.
the changing laws. So we talk about what the impact is of just some of these retirement benefit laws, but there are so many. I just went to an employment law breakfast this morning, and just keeping up with all of the changes that impact what I do every day, that impact our employees, to try to keep us out of trouble,
yeah.
But also to be fair to our employees and make sure we're providing the best service. So it's a challenge every day, and that keeps it fun and engaging.
Well, what are some of those highlights for you? But you know, when it's all working, or these breakfasts, right. So, you know, ERISA breakfasts,
turnover is really low.
So that's something you point to say. It's,
absolutely.
Or maybe an employee comes up and says, "Man, I love my benefits
absolutely.
Plan."
Absolutely, and they're actually talking about it.
Yeah.
Did you hear? You know, the company is going to match at the same percentage. And you know, when you hear that dialogue in the break room instead of what was on the TV show last night, I mean, that to me is really telling us that we're doing something right. Also, smiling faces when we're doing presentations also helps. But we do engagement surveys, pulse surveys to formally get feedback. But it's really about the nature of people. Are they starting to refer Boys and Girls Clubs, Metro Atlanta, as to their friends for employment? You know, these are signs that we are beginning to do things right.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and so that's a good, honest mm-hmm. testimony, good, honest feedback. And then it all trickles down to helping the more boys and girls.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's
exactly.
even better. Very good. So, all right. So let's remind our listeners one more time. First, Stephanie, how they can find out information about you and the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta.
Wonderful. Please visit our website, Boys and Girls Clubs Metro Atlanta, at www.bgcma.org.
All right. And all this information will be posted on our website later, atlantabusinessradio.com, that you can go to and find and amplify from there. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you back in the studio again soon.
Thanks.
And Ann Tyler Hall, if you could tell us and our listeners how they can find you.
www.hallbenefitslaw.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
They are very active on social media. So if you begin to follow them on Twitter, you will stay up to date constantly on what's going on over there. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And look forward to more great things from you in 2016. And Bonnie, another great show. Thank you so much.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I think we'll have to have Ann Tyler back to talk about ACA some other time. That's a whole nother ball of wax and a big show, I think.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And I know our listeners would really appreciate that, as that has so many layers to dissect. And that'd be a great topic to revisit again on Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. So,
absolutely.
All right. So listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Remind you that Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors is currently seeking sponsorship. So if you or you know of someone who will be interested, contact us on the webpage at brxhq.com. And also, if you want to be a guest on the show, we appreciate that as well. So pitch us your story. If you're doing something interesting for your community and your profession, let us know. And thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network and Bonnie Buell-Russick, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.